website,
Okay.
to make sure the connection, as long as it's going to my website and YouTube, it should be fine. Good. Okay, we're live on the website. That's good. So hi everyone, thank you for joining my live stream this evening.
You froze
Tonight I
up.
am joined by a subscriber where you have around, I think we're still, yeah, so I'll start that again. So hi everyone, thank you for joining my live stream this evening. I am live with Imus Christendom. You are our YouTuber and you have about nearly 20 or over 20,000 subscribers now on YouTube. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Steve Browse, and my YouTube channel is called Imus Christendom. It's a Catholic YouTube channel, which has become a traditional Catholic YouTube channel because I became a traditional Catholic, and I pretty much specialize in, I do a lot of apologetics, and then I also do a lot of defending of the SSPX, and then we talk a lot about the Marian apparitions of the coming chastisement. That's pretty much what my channel is about.
So, what is going to happen for the next coming chastisement? So what can people expect for the chastisement? I know there could be like wars and famines, but I know, in Akita, she said that our fires will fall from the sky. What do you think she meant? Well, do you think she meant actual fire, or like more maybe like nuclear or war type like missiles?
I tend to think that it could be nuclear war, like nuclear missiles. I think Father Ripperger has said, and I don't want to end up on that show of quoting Father Ripperger, things he didn't say, but I think he did say it was going to be fire from the sky. I think the indication would be the same thing that would happen with Sodom and Gomorrah for the same reason, because that's the same sin that we are promoting in the world today. So, but yeah, with if I were to kind of put things together, what my understanding of things are gonna happen. Of course, where we are today and where we were 5 years ago is different because there's going to be, according to the prophecies, the church is going to become it gonna end up in a very bad spot. People are gonna apostatize from it. The world's gonna start hating it. They're gonna start hating the clergy. They're gonna go after it. There's going to be a big war, which a lot of people are probably not going to survive. It is going to be very intense, but it will also probably be very short. The fire from the sky could be God's wrath. It could be nuclear war. Now, if Garabandal is correct and some others, then there will be an enlightenment period for where everyone will have an encounter with God, where He will show them the state of their soul, show them that yes, He's real. Catholicism's real. This is where you would go if you were to die. And we'll have an actual a mass conversion. Lots of people will then convert to the church. I think there's like a 6 week period is what they say, where Satan will not be allowed to do anything, and then he'll be loosed, and a lot of people will fall away. And according to Garabandal, if that doesn't stop where we're going, then we will have the chastisement. But almost all the other prophecies seem to say we're going to have the chastisement. We're going to have the war. There's going to be anywhere from a third to two thirds of the people will die. The legitimate French monarch will rise up, and it's not clear to me whether the war is with him or if this is a separate war. But he will conquer all the nations, get rid of all the republics and all of the democracies, and we will establish Christendom again, and Catholic Church in charge Christendom. That will last for about 40 years, and then his successor will be the Antichrist. So that's my understanding of what, and that's based on several prophecies, including Bartholomew Holzhauser, who put out a prediction of the seven ages of the church. According to him, we are at the end of the fifth age, the sixth ages, the restoration, the era of peace, the triumph of the Immaculate Heart, but it will only last for like 40 years or something like that.
40, or did you say 40 or 4?
40.
Sorry,
Yeah,
40.
there's different statements. Like I think one statement I think Our Lady made was 20 to 25 years of good harvest and men will forget. That to me, that doesn't mean that the period will be 25 years. It will be that there will be 20 to 25 good years, men will forget, and then of course it'll take some time for things to get bad again. And there could be a restoration from the time that the great Catholic monarch takes his throne. There could be 15 or 20 years of rebuilding before we get civilization going again.
Interesting. So do you think that the second coming of Christ is near? Or do you think, like, we don't know what's going to happen to see in the future. He could come back for another, say, 2,000 years or even more, or he could come back tonight or any time. But do you think we're close to the second coming of Christ? He might come after the chastisement, or do you think it'll be immediately? I know this is kind of a complicated question, but do you think that the second coming will happen immediately after the chastisement? Or do you think, I kind of believe that, I used to believe that eventually we'll go back to, you know, to Christianity, and that the second coming of Christ wouldn't happen if we convert back to Christianity. That's the notion I kind of got, but I don't know if I'm correct in saying that. Or
if I were to go by what the Venerable Bartholomew Holzhauser says, that we'll have the chastisement. At the end of that is going to be the return of Christendom and the great Catholic monarch, but he will only reign for about 40 years because he will be in his 40s when he takes over. And then when he dies, the Antichrist will actually take over, and he will rule the Roman Empire, because that's what the great Catholic monarch will become, the Holy Roman Emperor, and will rule the old Roman Empire. He will not be the Antichrist, but his successor will be. And then we start from there. It's 3 years until Christ returns. So what I would say is, you know, I'd say probably within the next 50 years is what I would say would be the second coming of Christ. But before then, we're going to have the chastisement, the restoration, the triumph of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, and then we'll have the end times. That's what I think. There are other people who think different things. Another would be that this is the end times. What we're going into is the actual tribulation, and the Antichrist is just around the corner, who's going to try to solve everything. And then there's another one that kind of follows what I'm saying, except instead of it being only a 40-year reign of Christendom, that's actually a 1,000-year reign. It's kind of a premillennial idea, like similar to what the evangelical Protestants think, where Christ comes back for 1,000 years. Only this one, they're not saying he's going to come back. It's just going to be the rule of Christendom for 1,000 years before the return of Christ. But yeah. The one I subscribe to is we're going to have the chastisement. We'll have the great Catholic monarch who will rule for about 40 years. And then it'll be the Antichrist and the end times and the second coming.
I mean, the way I see it, I just see it like whatever happens, happens. You have to let the dice roll where it's going to fall, you know. But Jesus does say in Scripture, when I come back, will there be any faith left right on earth? And you kind of look at the world today and it's kind of like you ask that question. Yeah,
well, according to Bartholomew Holzhauser, the end of the fifth age will look like the seventh age, only it will be... People have described it as sort of a dress rehearsal. So you have a mini apostasy, a mini this, a mini tribulation, which is the chastisement. It won't be near on the... So what he would say is what we're experiencing now is not near the scale it will be when the actual end time comes in the seventh age.
Interesting.
Because we're at the very end of the fifth. The sixth is going to be very short. It's just the era of peace, which is only 25 to 40 years. I say 40 years. And then after that is when the Antichrist comes, and then the second coming. But in that part, it will be even worse than it is now, according to Holzhauser.
Interesting. I mean, the next stages you just described, sixth and seventh, could happen anytime. I mean, we're in the fifth stage now, but
right,
the other two just could happen in the length of, say, 1,000 years or even 500 years, you know?
Right. Yeah, we don't even know if Holzhauser is right, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, but if I take that, and then I take the things that, you know, the Marian apparitions, like A Lady of Good Success, that talks about, of course, it concentrates more on the church, but even then talks about the state of the world. And every one of these prophecies talks about a war that's coming.
Yeah.
And then at the end of that war will be the triumph of the Immaculate Heart, the restoration of the church. So how that all comes out, we don't really know. There's different, yeah. There's. I tend to subscribe to what Holzhauser says. At least that's kind of where I always tend to think.
Yeah. And you said too, you make videos defending the SSPX. So my question I'm trying to figure out is the SSPX in full communion with Rome? I mean,
Well, I would say they and even I would object to the use of the term full communion. There's to me, or partial communion. You're either in communion or you're not in communion. I think that you can make the argument from 1988 until 2009 that there was maybe a schism, maybe they weren't in communion with Rome. But since the excommunications of the four bishops have been lifted, to me, how can you say you're no longer excommunicated from the church, but you're also not in full communion? And that is what Pope Benedict XVI said. So officially, they according to Rome, they are not in quote full communion. But most the traditionalists like me and the SSPX, we don't really subscribe to that. You either are or you aren't. It's black or white. And I would say that they are in communion because their excommunications have been lifted. They've been given faculties to hear confessions and to witness marriages. The actual state, the actual status of the priests of the society, say Pius X, is that they are supposedly suspended ad divinis. They are part of the Catholic Church, but they exercise no canonical function because their bishops don't have jurisdiction. Their bishops are sacramental only. They say, and I believe this too, because of the state of the church, they have a supply jurisdiction that gives them the right to do what they're doing. Does that make sense?
Sort of. I mean, it's like I kind of don't know who tried it. I don't know if Vatican II is right or SSPX. I mean, it's kind of a complicated subject. I mean, I would like to think the SSPX are not in schism, but I kind of have my doubts as well
And I
because,
understand that.
but at the
I
same
don't
time,
argue with you. I mean,
but at the same time,
it's an
if the
understandable
Orthodox
position.
Church. The
What?
Orthodox Church is the Orthodox Church is in schism, but they have their excommunications lifted, but it's still considered, I think, a mortal sin to
Who's
go.
that? The Orthodox? So they actually did not have their excommunications lifted. What happened in the 1960s was Pope Paul VI and the Archbishop of Constantinople lifted the excommunications that happened in 1054, and it specifically says in that document that those excommunications were for the men involved and not the churches. So the only thing that was actually lifted was the excommunications that those men did with each other, because that's the only excommunication that was done. But they act like the Orthodox Church or whatever is never, the reason why they're excommunicated is because they're in schism, and the reason they're in schism is because they do not recognize the authority of the papacy. Ironically, in canon law, they are allowed to take communion though in Catholic churches, which is kind of odd. So I don't even know that the Catholic Church sees them in schism anymore, honestly.
I mean, I would
It,
say
it, it,
the SSPX is more closer to Rome than the Orthodox Church. I would say that, but like the thing is, though, is like I don't know if the church should be allowing people to go to Catholic masses that are not, whose priests or bishops aren't really in full communion. How would that be listed? Like, how would SSPX masses be? Well, said if they're not in full communion and if their priests are suspended.
Well, the question is that I ask myself is, can I go to an SSPX mass without incurring a penalty such as excommunication? Is it can I do it without sinning? Can I take communion? And the answer, from what I've looked into, was the answer that's come from Rome through the Pontifical Commission Ecclesia Dei is a very reluctant yes, because many people have asked this question: does it fulfill your Sunday obligation? Yes, it does in the strict sense, is that what they put. And that's because canon law says that we fulfill our Sunday obligation by attending a mass in the Catholic rite on Sunday or the evening before. Well, this is a Catholic rite. But many people have, through the years, have written to the Pontifical Commission Ecclesiae Dei, which no longer exists, by the way, and asked that question. And the last one that we got was, if you're going there to separate yourself from Rome, then this would be a sin. if you're going there because you have a devotion to the 1962 missal, this would not be a sin. Yeah. And then it does fulfill your Sunday obligation. You know, the excommunication that happened in 1988 was against Monsignor Lefebvre and the four bishops. The clergy were not excommunicated. The faithful that attend the chapels were not excommunicated. But those, again, those excommunications with those four bishops have been lifted. And they have been given faculties for confession and to hear marriages. So it's not cut or dry. It is very murky. And for me, I go by what the Pontifical Commission of Ecclesia Dei had said in the past, and that is, if you're simply going there because you want the 1962 Mass or for a devotion to the 1962 Missal, then as long as you're not trying to separate yourself from Rome, then you're not sinning, you're not excommunicated, and all that. So,
yeah, I mean, I remember Pope Francis in 2015 gave them faculties to hear confession. I think he did that, didn't he? So it must be okay then to go to the...
Yeah, that he did that in the Jubilee year, and then he extended it afterwards until further notice, basically, and that's never been revoked. So they, to this day, have the faculties to hear confessions.
Yeah, and another thing, too, so I go to the SSPX Resistance. They're the only available Latin Mass nearer to me, and I don't know if they're... I think their Masses are valid, and I think their confessions are valid. I'm not 100%.
They would be, their confession or their Masses would definitely be valid. Their confessions would be, they would be claiming the same supply jurisdiction that the SSPX did before 2015. But at the faculties that Pope Francis gave to the SSPX would not extend to like the Resistance or anything like that, if that matters to somebody. I don't know that it would matter to me too much. I do believe that we are in a state in the church that it warrants going to these places. Even the Code of Canon Law, and I don't remember exactly which one it is, but there's one that's that says if you have no other choice, even morally, if you cannot even morally approach a regular Catholic priest, you can go to one that's been suspended or... I mean, it's actually two different canons, but essentially it says that even if, you know, morally you cannot approach a regular Catholic priest, you can approach one that is in schism or has been suspended. I can look those up if you want me to, and I can say exactly where they're worded if you want.
Yeah. I mean, why did the SSPX break away? Why did Marshal Lefebvre, consecrate bishops? I mean, I've read his book, but just for the podcast's sake, I'm asking that question for the audience. You might not know why Marshal Lefebvre consecrated those bishops. I've read his book about I Accused the Council, and he talks about certain things that happened during Vatican II. But were you able to give more an explanation why he, just for the, you know, the...
Sure, and I'm far from an expert on this, but from what I do know some. He was approached by some seminarians because after the council, the seminaries got so bad, they went so liberal and everything, that there were some seminarians who wanted a traditional formation. They asked around, and they were told by several bishops or cardinals to go to Monsignor Lefebvre, Archbishop Lefebvre, who was retired at the time. And he kind of reluctantly said, okay, that he would help them. He was actually given a cone. That a cone is the monastery had been around for 600 years with the, I can't remember exactly what they're called, but the monks that follow St. Bernard, you know, the dogs that, the big dogs, because it's those guys. And it was being sold, and one guy overheard some other guys talking about buying it and turning it into a nightclub. So he got a couple of other guys involved to buy it, and then they just gave it to Archbishop Lefebvre, and that's how the seminary got started. And it just evolved. He just kind of came to the conclusion that nobody else, you know, he informs these priests, nobody's going to ordain them. there's no ordinations in the old rite anymore. They're all the new rite. So he started the SSPX, and he started it through the proper channels. It was all approved and everything. He had some visitators come by, which we've seen that happen with Bishop Strickland and in the past. And when Rome sends people to visit, it basically means that you're going to get in trouble. And so he was told not to ordain.
The FSSP have gotten a visitor. Hopefully, do you think that?
Yeah, they're having someone or somebody's coming. Either they have or they're coming soon. I'm not real sure. I haven't kept up with that. But he was told, Archbishop Lefebvre was told not to ordain them. He did. That caused him to be suspended, the priest to be suspended. His point was that the true Catholic faith was being undermined as a result of the Second Vatican Council. And there are errors in the Second Vatican Council. If you read the documents, which I've read most of them, I would say I've read, I can't think of the names of them right now. I haven't read all of them, but I've read most of them. And if you read those and you read other statements from previous popes, they're contradictory. They just aren't. Okay.
Yeah.
And we know that
there's different interpretations as well to the Vatican II Vatican, which you can interpret to them liberally or kind of conservative. I mean, I haven't really read them yet, but I have seen like some of the documents. Not like in full context, only like certain parts.
The big one is religious liberty. There's some statements in the Second Vatican Councils that are directly contradicting previous statements from the popes, especially and I've done a couple of videos on that. What the Syllabus of Errors from Pius IX says and what Vatican II says, and they're contradictory. They just are. The idea is, we can interpret this and harmonize it, but the society's position is we can't with some of this stuff. And I agree with them on that. But most of what's in the documents of the Second Vatican Council are okay. A lot of it just reiterates what the Catholic Church has always said, but then they'll say this, and that's a problem, basically. Yeah. But and a lot of it too, like I said, the result of Vatican II was the faith was not being taught. And look, Archbishop Lefebvre saw that. He wanted to preserve the Latin Mass. He wanted to preserve the traditional rites. An argument can definitely be made that the church cannot get rid of the traditional rites, and they cannot get rid of the Latin Mass.
Yeah, because John the 23rd, Pope Saint John the 23rd, was all for the Latin Mass. He was all for the Gregorian chant. So it was then Paul VI, he approved, didn't he? Approve the changes to Novus Ordo.
Yes. Yeah.
But then again, he said that certain parts of it should be in Latin. I think on a Sunday, the Vespers should be in Latin or something. I think he said something, I'm not sure. But he never wanted communion in the hand either. He wanted it on the tongue. Paul VI was all for communion on the tongue. He was never. That was all the bishops that bring in communion in the hand.
Part of the problem, and this is where I think the Second Vatican Council comes in. Part of the problem is that it calls for the establishment of all these bishops' councils. They didn't have any of that before the Second Vatican Council, from what I understand. Like in America, we have USSCB. Different countries have their different bishop councils. And from what I can understand, the council makes a lot of these decisions to be made by those councils. And so that's one of the big areas that the SSPX has a problem. One of the problems that they have with the Second Vatican Council is collegiality. And this idea that the bishops too also have within their consecration governance. And the idea prior to Vatican II was that the bishop got its governance from the Pope. The Pope bestows the governance on them. And with collegiality, it's actually part of their consecration. Now, the council makes very clear that their governance is only activated by the Pope. In other words, they cannot exercise their governance without the Pope's approval. But where we see a lot of these problems creep up over the years, when you talk about, well, Pope Paul VI didn't want this, Pope Paul VI didn't want that, and Pope John Paul II didn't want this. Well, wait a minute, they're the Pope. What, then why did it happen? And part of the answer to that is because of these councils that were set up and this idea that they two together can make this decision. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I mean, it's a behavior of the bishops as well. I mean, the Pope can't really control the action of every single bishop, you know.
Yeah, you're right. But then, you know, what changed? Why all of a sudden are these bishops, you know? Why do they think why did they at least think that they could go against what Paul says? Well, for one reason, he never commanded it, I guess. He said, this is what I want. Well, you can want it all day long, but unless you say this is the way it's going to be, then we don't have to do it, I guess. I don't know. But I look at Paul VI, and I hate to say this, but he just seemed almost like he was kind of a weak man. Like he got pushed around a lot, let people tell him, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't think there has been much strong leadership in the Catholic Church. That's the impression I get, even among priests. I mean, they kind of seem more worldly. I mean, I prefer, you know, nice and strict priests that are willing to speak out against problems that are plaguing the world, you know, and talk about, you know, hell and, you know, all that stuff. They don't really talk about that anymore. I mean, I didn't even know you couldn't receive communion in mortal sin. I never knew it until somebody actually pointed it out to me. Yeah. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that missing Mass on Sunday was a mortal sin for a long time. I didn't know it. They didn't teach me that in RCIA, and I went to Catholic Church for probably at least 10 years before we went to some kind of conference, and they had a priest who went around giving these conferences, and he made it very clear. And I'm like, oh, wow, I did not know that. So,
yeah. And I never knew the rosary. Like, I'm 18 now, and I did not know that the rosary existed until I was 16. And I'm living in Ireland. I went to a Catholic school, did my first Holy Communion, and I never knew the rosary existed until I was 16.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, I didn't know it until I was 21, but that's when I became Catholic. So. Yeah. Or no, 22, I guess. Oh no, actually, yeah. I did know it before then because I had some Catholic friends and I dated a Catholic girl. I think maybe the rosary seems to be very prominent where I'm at, even though this is a very Protestant area of the country that I live in. There's only a 5%, the number of Catholics that live here is only 5%, but seems like the rosary is pretty prominent in the Catholic life here, even in the Novus Ordo. So
yeah, I suppose it's kind of shocking to say that too, because I'm from a country that had nearly the highest attendance rates in Mass up until the 1980s in the whole world. You know, we were the most Catholic country in the world, Ireland. Uh-huh. It was like, and in Catholic schools they don't teach the faith anymore. They teach more of a secular, because they just teach your first Holy Communion and your confirmation. And I didn't make my confirmation because I became an atheist, and then it was only 2 years ago I came back to the faith, and I made my confirmation last year, I have to say.
Oh wow. Okay, so how old would you have been if you would have gone when you were supposed to?
12.
Yeah. Okay. Is it where I'm at? 17 is, well, my two oldest, they just going through the program, they were confirmed at 17, and I think my two oldest were confirmed at 15 or 16. They kept moving it. So to me, 17 is not a late age, but I guess in Ireland they do it a lot younger than that.
Yeah, I mean, it's all through the school system, so it is. So when you do your first Holy Communion, when you're about, say, 8 or 9.
Oh, yeah. At 7 years old is where it is what it is here. Second grade, mm-hmm. Basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
But my two oldest went to Catholic school. My two youngest did not, because they were twins, and they're boy-girl twins, and my daughter had cerebral palsy, and they just didn't have the accommodations, so they went to the public school, and they got through a like the Sunday school, it's called Parish School of Religion. But I mean, the Catholic school here was pretty good. It was, they at least taught them the basics, and you didn't have to deal with the stuff that you deal with in public schools here. So it was a lot better at the Catholic schools here. But I mean, both of them left. Neither one of them stayed with the Catholic Church. So,
like all the primary schools in Ireland, like all the elementary schools in Ireland are Catholic, but all the secondary schools are multi-denominational. There's not really many Catholic, could you say, secondary schools. I mean, it's a different structure compared to the American system. Our system is completely different to
the US. Here it's secular school is free. Well, it's supported by our taxes, but if you wanted to send them to a Catholic school or another private school, you have to pay tuition. So, and you don't get tax breaks.
This froze there for a second.
So oh, okay. I'm we sorry.
We're talking about
in was, America.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry.
Sorry, you just said that like in it's free to go to a secular school. That's when you cut out.
Yeah, for it in America, the secular schools are free, and then if you want it, supported by taxes. But if you want to send them to Catholic school, you've got to pay. You have to pay a tuition.
Yeah, I think it'd be the same here. If you want to go to a private, say secondary school that's Catholic, you'd have to pay, but you have to pay for. Public schools here in Ireland as well. It's not free unless you go to Northern Ireland, which is part of the United Kingdom.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So back to the SSPX. So do you think the SSPX has been predicted by Mary in her apparitions? I mean, I've seen people online saying the Marshal of Ev was predicted by Our Lady of Good Success, but haven't really. So do you think Mary has predicted, say, the SSPX?
I believe that, the Marian apparitions talk about the few faithful clergy. And in the mass of clergy that is not faithful, but the few faithful clergy that are faithful to her and how they will be the ones to bring in the restoration. And I do believe that the SSPX is at least included in that. I think the SSPX is really kind of the key in my opinion. I mean, they are the traditional movement. They started it. They are the most well-organized. It all really kind of depends on them in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So the answer to your question would be yes, but that's just an opinion. I don't have, any specific Marian apparition to quote from other than, in general, she talks about the clergy that stay faithful to her.
Yeah. Did ever hear of Favre Gobi?
Mm-mm.
I think he was in Ireland. I think he was in Guadalupe. And I think he came to Ireland, Knock Shrine. Apparently, he received messages from Our Lady to say that there was a small schism, but they're going to still be faithful to the church. But it hasn't been approved or anything. It's just private revelations. But I don't know if that's actually true what she said, but that's what somebody else is saying. But I don't know.
At this point with the new changes, I don't know that I would even put any stock in it says about the apparitions today. We just stick with the ones, you got Our Lady of Good Success, you've got La Salette, you've got Akita, you've got Fatima, and then there's some others too that are less known but are approved. We've got those, we stick with those. That's what I personally believe. And then anything beyond that, I mean, unless Rome starts unapproving stuff, which they already have. They've unapproved Our Lady of Amsterdam. It was approved.
Yeah.
And I did a video on that.
I'm actually just thinking about Lady of Amsterdam. Didn't she predict the liturgical changes in the church? Like, what did she actually say about the liturgical changes?
I read some of her stuff and that was years ago, and I don't really remember everything that she did. I did a video on it, and I picked out a few things, but it seems to me like I remember her talking about the church updating and you know, saying the church feels it needs to update, and then in another apparition shows that updating, basically the churches were empty. So,
yeah,
you know, the only ones that I know that talk about a new mass is Mary Julie Janney, and it's not good.
Yeah, and Catherine Emmerich, her as well.
Those are the only two that I know of that specifically talk about a new liturgy, and it's not good.
Yeah, what's her name again? Sorry,
Mary Julie Jehaney.
Mary Julie Jehaney.
She's a French mystic. Yeah,
French mystic. Yeah, and when people, I'm just reading some of the comments on her stream. They're saying, some of them are saying that Vatican II is a new religion, but I'd be inclined to disagree. But I don't think it's a new religion. I just think that maybe poor decisions were made at the council. Maybe the council was too liberal for the modern world. I mean, maybe it should have been a more stricter council. But it could be a strict council, but then the priests aren't strict. It's not really the council's... It's not the council's not the problem to the situation. I think it's the fact that priests aren't really as strong as they were 100 years ago. That's what I also...
I think it's a little bit of both, because my opinion of the Second Vatican Council is it is a valid council. It is a valid ecumenical council, but it itself said it was not infallible or dogmatic. The Pope John the 23rd said that when he opened it. Pope Paul VI said that when in his closing speech, and he also said it and I know it's a, you know, he in his closing speech, he said not dogmatic, but then he gave a homily where he says not dogmatic or infallible. And some of the people who try to make it infallible today say, well, that's not official. Okay, but was he lying or did he not know? You know, yeah. if he didn't know that he was making it infallible, then it's not infallible because he didn't intend to do that, obviously. And then you can also look at the end of Lumen Gentium. It talks about, and I can't say it exactly, but there's an appendix at the bottom that says that, you know, if we bind the faithful to something, we will tell you. And then it proceeds to only bind to the First Vatican Council, the Council of Trent, but everything else, it never actually says that. So in my opinion, I think the evidence is overwhelming that this is a non-infallible, non-dogmatic ecumenical council that is part of the non-infallible ordinary magisterium. Now, that doesn't mean that we can, obviously, it doesn't mean that we can ignore it if it's ordinary magisterium. We're supposed to adhere to the ordinary magisterium. But it does not have the guarantee of inerrancy. And if we find a problem with, if it's contradicting tradition, then I think we have a duty to, you know, point that out or do something with that, which is what the SSPX is doing. Because they're saying, wait a minute, this goes against the constant tradition of the church. We can't go along with that.
Yeah.
But the Holy Spirit has protected the church by making it a pastoral council and not a dogmatic and infallible one.
Like, even if it was a dogmatic, it'd be a lot worse if it was a dogmatic council, as you say. I mean, imagine if it was a dogmatic council. I mean, what, I think...
What's that?
I think it'd be a lot worse for situation if it was a dogmatic or infallible council. I mean, it isn't.
Yeah, but like you said, I mean, a lot of the way that it talks, though, there's no way that it could. The language it uses, it could be interpreted this way. And a lot of times it says this, but on the other hand, that. And then, yeah. So it doesn't ever actually, in a lot of cases, it never actually makes any kind of decision on anything.
Yeah.
But
it does. Yeah, sorry. You can keep going, sorry.
I was going to say where it does seem to, which is, you know, religious liberty and ecumenism and collegiality, those are problems. Yeah. And it's not, you know, it's not ecumenism, the false type where, you know, we're pretty much, we're all religions lead to God and, you know, it doesn't matter and all that. So where it talks about the Catholic Church or the church subsisting in the Catholic Church rather than saying it is the Catholic Church, which is what we've always understood it to be. You know what I'm saying? And of course, yeah. we believe that it's possible for people outside the physical confines of the Catholic Church to be saved. That is possible. So that's not what we mean when we say no, outside of the church, there's no salvation. But that doesn't mean that those religions are salvific. If they're saved, it's through the Catholic Church.
Yeah. Like, I think you're talking about invisible ignorance. Say, for example, you had a Methodist or an Anglican or a Calvinist or Presbyterian, whatever, or even evangelical, who do not realize that they are in error. They could still be saved because they didn't know. But if they didn't know and still remained Protestant, then they can't be saved because they rejected the truth. I would accept that.
Yeah,
even.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry, you keep going.
I was going to say, well, even with the statement that I quote a lot from Vatican II, says that you know, anyone knowing that the Catholic Church was established by Christ as necessary for salvation would refuse to enter or remain, could not be saved. So, invincibly ignorance means that you don't know any better, you know. Yeah. But that in itself is not going to save you. It just means that you won't be damned for not being Catholic. But if you know that the Catholic Church is the Church that Christ established, and you know that, and you refuse to enter it or remain, you will not be saved. But in my opinion, most Protestants today, and probably for the last several hundred years, probably are invincibly ignorant because they're not sufficiently exposed to true Catholicism. And what they are exposed to is usually a skewed version of it. But if their baptism is valid, then they are part of the body of Christ. And so, you know, in my opinion, they're under the same rules. If they formally embrace their heresy, they've got a problem. If they committed mortal sin and don't have perfect contrition, they have a problem. But, you know, when I look at, especially when it comes to the mortal sin aspect, you have to have the other two, conditions. They have to have full knowledge. They have to give their complete consent to it. And if one of those is missing, it's not a mortal sin. So it seems to me like venial sin is the norm, you know, and mortal sin seems to be actually guilty of it seems to be a little bit more of an effort. You know, you can't accidentally commit a mortal sin, right? And then perfect contrition, well, that means that you are sorry because you love Jesus with all your heart, and that's the only reason. So I don't know. Maybe I'm being foolish, but I typically have a believe that probably more Protestants are actually saved, evangelicals, than a lot of other traditional Catholics would say.
Yeah, I mean, see, Protestantism doesn't really have the concept of mortal or venial sin. They're just like sin is sin, regardless which one you commit. And then they're kind of like, we confess our sins to Jesus through prayer, not like, you know, the whole argument there is that we don't confess to a man, you know.
Well, technically, the only time that you have to confess to a man is if it is a mortal sin, so you have all three present. Now, for us Catholics, that's enough. We go. But if their contrition is perfect, then they would still be forgiven. So the only time it would really affect them is if they had all three conditions for mortal sin present and their contrition was not perfect. Their contrition was only imperfect. Now, how likely is that? That's what we don't know. You know, we just don't know.
Yeah, and so the subject of the Latin Mass, would you able to give a brief history on the Latin Mass, if that's
okay? Well,
is it the Mass of Ages? I mean, I know Pope Pius V, you know, in the 1500s, I heard that he gave an allowance to China to have their Mass said in Chinese. I mean, so I'm not.
Pope Pius spoke to. Okay, so the document in question is, I actually have it in here. Pull Primum, and I got a few excerpts of it. So Pull Primum is the document that Pope Pius V promulgated that made universal throughout the Catholic Church what we now call the Latin Mass, or TLM. It had some minor revisions through the years, but it basically stayed the same until you get to the changes after Vatican II. And this is what it says. It says, from the very first upon our elevation to the chief apostleship, we gladly turned our mind and energies and directed all our thoughts to those matters which concerned the preservation of a pure liturgy. Hence, we decided to entrust this work to learned men of our selection. They very carefully collated all their work with the ancient codices of our Vatican Library and with reliable, preserved, and embedded codices from elsewhere. Besides this, these men consulted the works of ancient and approved authors concerning the same sacred rites, and thus they have restored the Missal itself to the original form and rite of the Holy Fathers. So what Pope Pius V is claiming here is, we looked into this, and we're bringing back the old liturgy. And that's what he's claiming, that what we call the Latin Mass, which you would get if you go to a Society of St. Pius X or TLM, or a FSSP. Some would argue with me because they think the 1962 Missal had too many changes. But yeah, so whenever we call it the Mass of all time, or the call it the Mass of ages, it's not the same thing as what happened in the 1969. Pope Pius V didn't say, I'm going to write a Mass. Here, now use this, which is what Pope Paul VI did. He did, you know, the church just concocted a new Mass in the 1960s. That's not what's happening here. And then he says, let all everywhere adopt and observe what has been handed down by the Holy Roman Church, the mother and teacher of other churches, and let Masses not be sung or read according to any other formula than that of this Missal published by us. This ordinance applies henceforth, now and forever. By this present constitution, which will be valid henceforth, now and forever, we order and enjoin that nothing must be added to our recently published Missal, nothing omitted from it, nor anything whatsoever be changed within it under the penalty of our displeasure. Furthermore, by these presents, this law, in virtue of our apostolic authority, we grant and concede in perpetuity that for the chanting and reading of the Mass in any church whatsoever, this Missal is hereafter to be followed absolutely without any scruple of conscience or fear of incurring any penalty, judgment, or censure, and may freely and lawfully be used. Nor our superiors, administrators, canons, chaplains, and other secular priests or religious or whatever title designated obliged to celebrate the Mass otherwise than as enjoined by us. We likewise declare and ordain that no one whosoever is forced or coerced to alter this Missal, and that this present document cannot be revoked or modified, but it remains always valid and retains its full force. So when we talk about that, go ahead.
Is that document infallible? Like, can you use that document or?
So the argument is that the more modernists would use is that it doesn't matter what he says, because this is not infallible. It uses infallible language, I think. I think if you hear that, it sounds infallible to me. But the liturgy is a matter of practice as far as they're concerned, and so that's not something that can be made infallible. I don't know that that's true. This is where I think we're going to find out. When I read this, and you know, Father Ripperger has written a book about it, he tends to agree that, you know, that they can't get rid of the Mass because this, and for what this says, because this claims this is coming from tradition, and that's what he says. He's found that that's true, that there are elements in the Mass that are part of tradition that have to be there. And as the SSPX, I don't know if I've read what he has said, but what the SSPX says is that some of that is not missing, some very vital part of it is missing in the new Mass. But I would say that this probably is infallible. That's my personal opinion. There's going to be a lot of people who argue with me about that. But the reason why I believe that is because of the first statement that I read, where he says that they read through all the old codices, they looked at the ancient authors, and they have restored the Missal that was given to us by the fathers. That, to me, says this is tradition.
Yeah.
And the church can't get rid of it.
No. I mean, currently, I think...
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, currently, traditions, I mean, in the Novus Ordo has been, I mean, watered down. You have, you know, Eucharistic ministries, and you have communion in the hand, and
Well, yeah, I came into the church in the Novus Ordo. I used to be very liberal Catholic. I used to be, you know, love, think this was all just hip and wonderful. And for whatever reason, God has opened my eyes the last 5 to 10 years. And I think that that's, you know, the church has a problem with people not believing in the real presence.
Yeah.
Okay. When did that start? Probably when we stopped treating it like it was the real presence. When we started letting everybody just handle it, you know, and be disrespectful. And so in my opinion, that the Eucharistic minister is disrespectful because they're not ordained. They shouldn't be touching it. We shouldn't be touching it. And in fact, it's still the law of the church. We get an exception. It's an indult. The law actually says we are to receive on the tongue, but there is an exception and an indult. And as far as the Eucharistic ministers, I think it's only under certain circumstances and there's too many people, then maybe can it, you know, that's kind of what the Vatican II says on that. But yet that's become the norm.
Yeah. I mean, I think the majority of Eucharistic ministers don't realize what they're doing is wrong. They probably think that they are genuinely trying to help.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't think anybody's nefarious about any of it. No, even the priest in the Novus Ordo, I don't think anybody's, you know, got ill will or anything. But to me, if you just go to, I know you have, but go to Latin Mass for a month straight and then try to go back to the Novus Ordo, you're not going to be able to. You know, I mean, that was my experience anyway. When I first went to a Latin Mass, which was the TLM, wasn't the SSPX, and I still go to the diocesan Latin Mass here too. I tend to go to the SSPX more. But I don't have anything against like the FSSP or the diocesan Latin Mass or anything like that. But when I first went, I mean, I was just blown away by it. I was like, why would they get rid of this? I mean, I get maybe we want it in English so we can understand, but why didn't we just take this and translate it into English? Which I understand now why, because Latin is a sacred language, and if we're giving this gift to God, it's proper to give it in the Latin language.
Yeah. That's what my friend says, that they should have just translated and kept everything the same as translated. I just don't need to take out communion rails and tamper with tabernacles, like moving them off to the side and priest facing the people, because that's kind of a Protestant thing, the priest facing people. But even in Lutheran and Anglican churches, sometimes they, you know, turn their back as well. I mean, but to me, like, it's mainly a Calvinist thing, the minister faces the people. And I don't know how and why that crept into the church.
Well, going to the Latin Mass was the first time I ever saw a minister, you know, whatever, not face the people. And that, to me, it shows that there's something else going on here. You know what I mean? Why is he not facing? Well, he's not talking to us. You know, he's talking to God. We're observing to a certain degree. And so the Latin Mass, in my opinion, shows that we're there to give God something. We're not there to get something. If with the Protestant churches, they're always like, well, this is what I like. You know, that speaks to me. Well, are you going there to get something or to give something? You know, are you there to go give worship to God or to get something out of it? You know, to me, if the Latin Mass with the priest facing away makes it very clear, it's not about me. It's about God. And that's what we're doing.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I mean, I do think, you know, the Novus Ordo itself can be a nice celebrated Mass. I've been to Novus Ordo that has been celebrated very nicely, almost reverently. I mean, we don't have much Latin Mass here. All archers are Novus Ordo. It's kind of hard to get to the Latin Mass in where I live in Ireland. I can only get to it once a week. And that's only every Sunday, and that's it. I mean, there are groups that do it every day, but it's kind of hard to get to it, you know, because it's so far away, you know.
Yeah, I'm lucky where I live that we have an SSPX chapel, in our town. We also have a diocesan Latin mass in our town, and we have an Anglican ordinariate that's in a town over. And for an area that's very heavily Protestant, it's kind of odd that we have that selection, that we have that, but we do, and I'm thankful we do. Because I know there's people in America that talk about having to drive 3, 4, 5 hours to get to a Latin mass.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, traveling 4 or 5 hours is like from my place to near down the country. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what is an Anglican ordinance? I was just Googling them today. What actually is an Anglican? Is that like when an Anglican minister converts to the Catholic Church?
Typically, yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's a requirement, but I know that the one here in town, he was an Anglican minister, and he converted over. But it's basically an Anglicanized version of the Mass. It's done ad orientem. The communion's on the tongue. Only they do what's called intinction, where they take the host and they dip it in the wine, and then they put it on your tongue.
Well, that's nice. And,
yeah, and the liturgy is done in basically Shakespearean English.
What's that like? Is that
like, you know, thee, thou, like if you're reading the King James version of the Bible.
Yeah.
That's what the liturgy is. Yeah. I've gone to it a couple of times. I really wanted to like it, because I wanted, to me, that was kind of like a good compromise. You know, I don't really want to do the Novus Ordo anymore, but you know, SSPX, or you know, because I was that way for a while too. Like I said, that's why I don't, you know, condemn people who are like, I just don't know about the SSPX. I was that way for a long time.
Yeah.
And
there are groups still that were part of the SSPX, and then they came back to the Catholic Church, like the FSSP.
FSP, yeah.
There's only two churches of the FSSP in Ireland, and there's only one actual church for the SSPX, I believe, so far in Ireland. I think so, not 100% sure.
Yeah, the FSSP was a few priests and seminarians. Whenever Lefebvre consecrated the four bishops, they didn't like that, so they went to Rome and asked if they could, you know, give the traditional liturgy, the traditional Latin Mass, and do the traditional traditional rites, and that they would accept Vatican II and then accept the new Mass and all that. So that's pretty much what that is. So you kind of have with the SSPX, the splitting away, they're really the exception. They're the only ones that came this way. Most of them go the other way, where they're more radical, so to speak. Like the SSPV, they were sedevacantists, a contest and they got kicked out by Lefebvre.
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, I mean, about the Anglican thing you're talking about, I actually went to an Anglican church in Spain, but it was the actual Anglican church itself. It had like a female minister. I didn't know it was an Anglican until I got there, but they dipped the host into the wine, even though it's not bad, but they still.
Yeah, that's called intinction, is what they called the priest at the Anglican ordinariate told me it was. So, yeah. Which is a neat idea, I think, but yeah. you would have a problem dripping it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the Orthodox Church does that as well, I think, as well.
Yeah, I don't know much about the Orthodox Church on that. I know they use leavened bread, I know that.
Yeah, and then there's no Orthodox Church in Ireland, actually.
There's no Orthodox churches in Ireland? No.
And there's only one Lutheran church in Ireland as well, funny enough.
Yeah. Most of them around here are either Assemblies of God or Baptist. But we do have, there's one Orthodox church in town, and I think there's another one in a town a few miles away.
Yeah. Mainly in Ireland, it's Catholic churches, but we do have Presbyterian and Anglican and Methodist. But Presbyterian to be the most popular, and Anglican to be the most popular, that's in Ireland, and then a few evangelicals, and a few Baptist meeting houses, but they're not really popular in Ireland. Yeah. Yeah, so the last question I want to ask you, what do you think of the Vatican mascot? Have you seen that thing, the anime thing? Somebody asked me to ask you that at the beginning of the stream. I want to know your take.
I think it's, you know, I don't think there's anything inherently bad about it, but to me, that's just more of, you know, we got a problem with the youth. Let's try to bring the youth in. Oh, let's try this little avatar thing. Well, they might like it, but that's not going to make them want to come back to the church or anything like that. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, they don't want to admit what really will work. You know, they know that the youth are being drawn to the Latin Mass. So what do? They suppress it because they want to get rid of it. They want the youth to come into the Catholic Church. So we're going to do anything but what will actually solve the problem. And that, to me, is just more of it. It's this anime avatar that I guess looks like some anime character on a cartoon. And they might think it's kind of neat, maybe a little cool, but it's not, you know. The Catholic Church shouldn't be timely. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem with the new Mass and with Vatican II, is to try, and the whole idea of bringing the church up to speed with the world, because now all of a sudden, now you got to keep reinventing yourself over and over again, because the Mass is stuck in the 1970s. Well, it appeals to my parents, you know. appeals, and to a lesser extent, my generation too, until I found the Latin Mass. But the generations after, they don't like folk music, you know. We should have been at rap masses, you know, hip-hop masses a long time ago if you're going to do that. And so to me, this is just more of that. It's just more of trying to be hip and cool, and it just comes across as cringy. Whereas if you just do be what you are, which would be the Latin Mass, the traditional rites, and look like the Catholic Church, then you're going to draw people.
Yeah. So that's because I think it's very hard to appeal to people my age because their parents were kind of secular, and then it's kind of very hard to bring them into the church because they were raised in a secular household.
Does the anime avatar, does that appeal to you?
Not really, no.
So who are they trying to appeal to? I guess a younger audience than you?
I just think it's kind of childish, like maybe like a 5-year-old.
Yeah, thing. Yeah.
Maybe it's like 5-year-olds, maybe for a Catholic school. It'd be good for like a Catholic school for, say, kindergartens. Like, I think it should be more for them than for adults and teenagers. Like,
right. Yeah. Like I said, they just need to, you know, like whenever I'm making a video or whatever, and I look at I'll go into the images and I'm looking for a specific image or anything like that. The Catholic imagery is always traditional. You know, that's what people want. That's what nobody's going to get, you know, if there's a Catholic church, you're going to get the older church that's really nice and pretty. That's what the stock image you're going to get, right? There's no stock images of these new post-Vatican II churches.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my point is if they want to really appeal to people, be Catholic. Go back to being Catholic. That's all you got to do.
Yeah. It's like we need Catholic political leaders. Like Ireland really lacks that Catholic political leaders, you know, and so does the rest of, you know, I really think we need Catholic political leaders at the end of the day as well to try and fix this, but I think that's a long way off yet, though. That's
a few masculine priests wouldn't hurt either. Which you do get in the SSPX, you get a lot of the priests are more manly than they are in the Novus Ordo.
I know a few manly Novus Ordo priests as well. I mean, I did give them that, but they're very in the minority, though.
Yeah,
unfortunately. Yeah,
I know a few of them around here too. So, but yeah, they're definitely,
So I was thinking that for the last maybe few minutes of the stream, we could go through some of the comments and see if there's any questions I might have missed. So,
okay.
I'm blessed. I have 2 TLM within 15 minutes of me in the new chapel, 2 hours away when I want to make a day trip. Blue hair is not natural. That's referring to the
mascot. The avatar.
Yeah. Has anyone ever made a comment that the new Vatican mascot of next year has blue hair and muddy boots?
Yeah, I never, I come to think of it, I I didn't even think of that. So I don't know that I've seen anyone point that out, but yeah, you're right. It's a blue hair.
Yeah. And apparently she's holding a witch's stang. Do you know, it has like a two pointy things coming out of it?
Oh, okay. See, I see it. I didn't study it or anything like that. That, you know, the thing that I noticed about it is just, it looks like an anime character to me, you know.
Yeah.
I've got grandkids that watch anime in my house, and I got grown sons who watch anime, so I know.
Yeah. Well, I'm raising teens and surrounded by their friends, and they aren't impressed with modernism in the church, even if they love other modern things. Okay. It's good. The new mass was a completely new creation. It's not a continuation, but a break from tradition. It never happened in church history. I would be inclined to agree with that, but I still think it's a valid mass. Regardless,
You're talking about the Novus Ordo Mass.
Yeah, that's a comment I'm just reading out.
Yeah, you're gonna get. Yeah, there's a lot of people, and you know, I too say that it's a valid, legitimate Mass. But I think what they're, you know, and this would be kind of going back to the SSPX. One of the things, it's not just the Mass; it's the tradition, and it's also the traditional rites. And you have the Council of Trent in Session 7. Canon 13 that says, if anyone saith that the received and approved rites of the Catholic Church won't to be used in the solemn administration of the sacraments, may be contemned or without sin be omitted at pleasure by the ministers, or be changed by every pastor of the church into new other ones, let him be anathema. So,
But is that dogmatic or is that non-dogmatic?
Well, it's a canon and they have an anathema, so. Yeah, that would have to be dogmatic.
Yeah.
That I would think it is, because it has an anathema and it's a canon. So I'm not an expert on how to determine it, but those are the two things that I've always heard. Well, if it's a canon or if it has an anathema, then it's dogmatic. So.
Yeah. Father Hesey said that the new mass might be valid or might not be, or might be invalid for sure. It's doubtful and Catholics cannot attend doubtful mass. I mean, again, I think it's a totally... mass. I just think there's abuses and, like, you know, Eucharistic ministers and cleaning the hands. But I think the rest of it's valid. That was just a comment there.
As long as, because there are cases individually, you know, that it has been invalid but dated. I think there was from the Diocese of Kansas City, Kansas, there was a letter that was put out about a year ago that the wine that was being used in some of the parishes for decades turned out was not proper matter. So that means those masses were invalid. And then, of course, you have two instances in the United States, I think one in Detroit and one in Arizona, I believe. In both cases, a deacon had been baptizing people saying, "We baptized," instead of...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are individual instances in the Novus Ordo where they do become invalid. Of course, you may say, well, that could happen in the old rite too, but I don't think the old rite really allows for that.
Friend was saying the other day as well about the We Believe. He's saying that, like, there's this one priest who was baptized with We Believe. We baptize you in the name of the Father and the Son. Obviously, it wasn't valid, but he received first Holy Communion, he received confirmation, and then holy orders. That means he wasn't a valid priest. And then, obviously, the people don't know that, so that means their confessions, would they still be valid confessions, considering that they didn't know that the priest was...
In the past, I would have said that supplied jurisdiction would kick in, and I don't know, maybe it does. Father Padre Peregrino, Father David Nix, has said that a defect of form that big, that it does not. So I would say, according to Father Nix, he seemed to say that no, it wouldn't, that supplied jurisdiction wouldn't, because he didn't have proper
baptism.
Yeah, well, he didn't have proper faculties, because he has to be baptized before you can get anything else, you know.
Yeah, but like, the thing is, he didn't know himself that he was invalidly baptized until he, because they recorded his baptism. If they didn't record his baptism, he would have known. He would not have known that he was an invalid.
Well, I don't know how it all came out, but eventually somebody looked and found out this guy was doing it wrong.
Yeah. Another comment says, my Nova Sordo started with one female alter girl among boys, and now it's all girls, and the music is obnoxious. They try of sort to guilt trap you for not singing along with a big smile on your face. Okay.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You're going to like it. You know, isn't this great? You better like it. You know, we're so tolerant. Yeah. You better like it.
Yeah. It's a soft
version of what we see in the world, you know. Same thing.
Yeah. The FSSPX are holy, solid priests who will give their all to bring the sacraments to their flock. They are missionaries driving hundreds of miles to do God's work. I agree with that here. Then Father Bissick described that the attitude that the SSPX claimed the Novus Ordo is invalid and intended would not satisfy the weekly obligation. Now the Novus Ordo says that, or the SSPX says that, the Novus Ordo puts your faith in danger, and that's kind of putting a lot of people off, because it's saying, like, the Novus Ordo puts your faith in danger, which I think doesn't really, if you know that, you know.
So, well, I think what the SSPX position is that, yes, the Novus Ordo in and of itself is valid. Okay, but they say that it is defective to the point where it's not obligatory. And they warn, they say, don't go because it is a danger to the faith. I can't argue with them. You know, I raised four kids in the Novus Ordo, and they all four left. You know, two of them went to Catholic school. The other two went through PSR. You know, now I'm also going to say, because I personally am married to a Protestant, and we also brought them taking them to the Protestant church as well. And like I said, I don't know why God has opened my mind to these late in life, but I'm sure he got a good reason for it. So
yeah. And the same so thing is,
I can't blame the Novus Ordo completely. You know, it's my fault, even though I was doing what I thought was right at the time.
Yeah. I mean, as well as, you know, the same thing as in Ireland. I mean, all the people go to mass are the Novus Ordo mass, and then people who are brought up in the faith in Ireland go to a Novus Ordo mass, and then they kind of leave them when they get older. I mean, that's what kind of happened, you know, in the 70s. And even if they keep the Latin mass again, I still think that mass attendance would be poor, even if all the masses were in Latin as well. You know?
You said what was that part at the end?
Like, I just think that even if all the masses were in Latin, I still think mass attendance would be poor. You know?
Well, it might, but I look at it from a spiritual standpoint as well, and I see, you know, we have the Second Vatican Council that started in 1960, and it loosens up the church, opens up the church to the world. We change the rites, and we make it more world-friendly. We change the mass so that everybody can come and enjoy and all this, and then the world also goes down. So it's one thing Father Ripperger said that, you know, as the church, it's not so much that the world has influenced the church, and that's why this happened. The church always influences the world. So as the church goes, so does the world. The world is always going to be a little bit worse than the church, but if the church is in good shape, then the world is going to be okay. And he also in one of his videos, he pointed out, you know, the Second Vatican Council literally changed everything, even the rite of exorcism, which the first one they came out with, all the exorcists said no, and I think they revised it, and now they're using it. But one of the things that he says that they did was, in the Litany of Saints, it used to say spare us from the spirit of lust. They removed that after the council, and then what happened? Well, we had the sexual revolution, you see. Yeah. But the one that always got me was the watering down of holy water. The Novus Ordo of holy water is blessed, but it's not as potent as the old rite holy water was. Because the old rite holy water, they would exercise salt and exercise the water and put them together, but now they just bless the water, from my understanding. So when we do that, you know, we take away our arsenal from the devil, then the devil's going to be more active in the world.
Yeah, I mean, but when you said about the remove the prayer, save us from lust, I mean, even before the Second Vatican Council, the Vatican II started in 1962, the sexual revolution started in 1960, which means it happens before the First Vatican Council closed.
Yeah, I think maybe it did over in Ireland or something. I think the way I see it is that it started the late 60s, early 70s. That the early 60s started off okay. But then you also have contraception, which leads to all this as well. And that became legal in the United States, I think, in the 1950s.
Yeah, but the sexual revolution didn't come to Ireland until the 1970s. The sexual revolution. It came to Ireland in the 1970s.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
No. Oh, it did?
Yeah. But I'm saying that the sexual revolution started before Vatican II. Before Vatican II, the sexual revolution. I always thought it started in 1960. Because they called the council in 1962 to address that sexual revolution.
My understanding is that it started in the late 60s and the 70s, but that may just be in the United States. So, but you can also look at, like I said, contraception. It's still a moral problem. You know, the morality is, but I still think that the church loosening up still had a big effect on the world because of it.
Yeah. And another, I'll just go through a few more comments and then we'll wrap it up.
Okay.
Then, so I've been in a small conference with the right hand man of Father Lebev. He was the leader of the breakoff and the first superior of the FSSP. His office was right next to the Ruxingers. I have recorded it. His name was Father Bissig. I think I pronounced that right. Anyone is in San Diego recommends a good traditional mass. Do you know if there's anything in San Diego? Or if there's anything?
I wouldn't know. I don't know California very well. My suggestion would be to go to massoftheages.com. They have a Latin Mass Finder. And it has every Latin Mass, whether it's FSSP, SSPX, ICK, and all the others, including the diocesan Latin Mass. And it'll show you everything that is available in your area.
Yeah.
That would be my suggestion.
Yeah. There's one comment here I find funny. Taylor Marshall is the Black Pope of the Anglican Church.
You know, he actually, I think if I remember correctly, he said that of course, he doesn't recommend the Anglican Ordinariate anymore, but if I remember correctly, when he came over, he actually was involved in writing that liturgy, and now he doesn't. He only goes to the Latin Mass now. He says that it is a Novus Ordo, and it is. It is a Novus Ordo.
Yeah. And then Ireland is covered in mass rocks, which celebrated only the traditional mass and kept their island Catholic free penal. Times, yeah, we had a thing called penal laws. They were here of them whenever the Brits invaded. I mean, they made it illegal to be Catholic. They wanted us to become Protestant, but then it failed. Yeah, so I think that's everything now. I mean, there's lots and lots of comments that we can't get through. We only have about 50, nearly 50 people watching, 33 from your channel, and then just three from mine. Yeah. So thank you for coming on.
Hey, you're welcome. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
You're very welcome. Hope you can come on again.
Oh, soon. Sure.
Yeah. So good night to everybody who has joined in. I'll see you in my next stream. Until then.